Welcome to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, the number of coronavirus cases in Florida now tops 24,000. Governor Ron DeSantis meets today with a newly formed task force to look at how to reopen the state. And all this comes as he faces growing criticism over his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, this week, a range of problems besieged the state and the governor's office. Everything from continuing issues with Florida's unemployment website. Only about 4% of the people that have applied for unemployment have gotten those checks so far. To criticism over the state's Surgeon General leaving a news conference. He was ushered out after he said Floridians should continue practicing social distancing until there is a vaccine, and that could take a year.
The governor was also blasted for a new essential service category that allows the WWE, professional wrestling, to operate. Now we're going to take your phone calls in just a few moments. Have you tried filing for unemployment? Have you been successful? Should the state begin reopening some activities and lifting some restrictions, as some cities have begun doing? Should students and teachers go back to their school buildings in the weeks ahead? Is professional wrestling essential? 305-995-1800. Again, your phone calls in a few minutes, but line them up now. 305-995-1800. Your tweets also at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Now, Florida's unemployment rate shot up to 4.3% in March. Some new data was released earlier today. 443,000 people are now without work. That's more than a 50% jump from February. Before the newest unemployment numbers were announced, I spoke with Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez about how the state is dealing with the ongoing crisis. Lieutenant Governor, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Let's start with unemployment. 29 of every 30 Floridians who filed for unemployment benefits are still waiting to learn if they will receive the money. What's the estimation when they will learn?
That's been a very big concern of the governor. And as you've seen over the past couple of weeks, he's dedicated a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of resources, a lot of personnel to fixing the inadequacies of the previous system, working to ensure that Floridians can now access it through the alternate site, the PEGA site, asking state employees, which are working from home or deemed non-essential at this point, to pitch in and help access the call center, answer questions, help process applications. So what we've really focused on the past couple of weeks is trying to get through that huge backlog. As you can imagine, over the past 4 weeks, the week ending March 21st, we had 74,000 applications. The week ending March 28th, over 228,000. The week ending April 4th, over 169,000. And the week ending April 11th, over 175,000. So obviously a tremendous amount of claims, but be that as it may, the governor has asked Secretary Satter of the Department of Management Services to step in and to handle all unemployment COVID-related aspects of the Department of Economic Opportunity. Secretary Satter comes from the private sector. He has tremendous expertise, and we're confident that he's going to be able to work through that backlog, get Floridians the relief they need. I know that as of
Lieutenant Governor, let me interrupt, though, because all of those resources the governor has applied to the filing system, and still one out of 30 Floridians who've applied have actually received money.
Yes. So I was going to get to that. So as of last few weeks, what we've asked the secretary to do in his short time that he's been at the department is to sift through all that information and get us actual numbers. And apart from getting us actual numbers is get Floridians their checks. So we know that over 141,000 of those claimants, their applications have been reviewed. We know that 121,000 payments, equaling roughly $47 million, have gone out to more than 33,000 Floridians. So we are working diligently to try to get those applications processed.
What kind of time frame can those Floridians, those 850,000 other filers who are still waiting, what kind of time frame can they expect?
What the governor has said in multiple press conferences is that under normal circumstances, that process usually takes 3 weeks, but that is unacceptable to him. And so I don't think he's given a hard and fast deadline, but I know he would like to see those applications processed, money out the door in roughly a week's time.
Okay. So that's the state portion of the unemployment, which is up to $275 a week. The federal government, we know, Lieutenant Governor, has had stimulus efforts that include an additional $600 a week for someone who's lost their job because of the virus. That money comes through the state. When will the federal portion of those unemployment benefits come through to Floridians?
Yes, that's an important additional relief for Floridians. I think that together with the state portion and the $600, I think that's going to bring a lot of relief to Floridians throughout the state. I know that this week, more than 23,000 federal checks have already gone through.
Let me ask for a clarification on those. Do you mean the unemployment, the $600 a week,
the $600.
Or the federal stimulus checks, the
$600
a week?
No, the $600. Okay. That's what I've been told. So I know personally of individuals that have already received it. And so we're confident that that money is going to start to flow very quickly. And again, we're working as quickly as we can.
But that flow also relies on the state's own unemployment system, correct?
Well, it goes through the state system, but certainly the federal government has wired the state the money. We are getting it out the door. So we're working very, very quickly.
But getting it out the door when filers are approved by the current state system for unemployment claims, right?
That is my understanding.
Let me ask you about the governor's order to close school buildings. It expires on May 1st. Should it be extended?
We're looking at that. I know he mentioned a week ago or so discussions around school. I know a lot of people got very anxious about that, and people were up in arms and saying, we're going to open schools again. And so that's never what he said. I don't think his intention was to say, we're going to open schools May 1st. What he wants to do, and I think it's the prudent thing to do, is have conversations and talk to our superintendents, talk to the Commissioner on Education, get input from parents, teachers, and really understand the enormity of what this transition has meant for our students throughout Florida. But I think what you're going to see is a continued conversation, and I'm sure there'll be an announcement very soon. But you've heard from superintendents, in particular Miami-Dade County and others, that have indicated that they do not believe it would be a good decision to open up. Obviously, South Florida is where the brunt of the cases are, probably 60%, if not a little bit more, in the Tri-County area. So I think that's something that obviously the governor is in consultation with those that are on the front lines, and we'll make decisions that are really going to have priority number one, which is the safety and well-being of our students, our teachers, and all educational personnel.
When you say an announcement may be coming shortly, is that an announcement regarding the rest of the school year in Florida?
I suspect that the governor obviously will make an announcement at some point in the very near future to talk about, yes, the rest of the school year. And I think we're going to have continued conversations around not just the rest of this school year, I mean, because obviously there's maybe about a month and change left, but obviously what impact this pandemic has on the next school year as it relates to open, you know, starting up. Are we going to have to switch our start dates? You know, counties have already identified their start dates for the next school year. I don't know. I don't know if there's going to have to be any additional changes made to the next school year calendar. But again, those are conversations that we're going to have to continue to have.
According to the state's Department of Health, almost 1 in 5 COVID-19 deaths have been at long-term care facilities like nursing homes. But which facilities those patients or even staff that have tested positive remains private? Why?
We're looking at that from a legal perspective. I think you'll hear shortly if the governor will release through the Surgeon General the names of the facilities. What I want to assure Floridians,
what are the legal considerations here by just releasing the addresses? Because law enforcement officials, for instance, the sheriff in Volusia County, says he gets addresses of positive cases each night from the Department of Health.
Well, I think what he gets is cities and zip codes and things of that nature. I don't know that he gets actual addresses, but I'll go back and check on that. I think that we obviously want to be mindful of the legal parameters in terms of privacy and things of that nature.
The Miami-Dade County Medical Examiner's Office has released the names, ages, dates, and places of death to the Miami Herald for all those who've died from the virus in Miami-Dade County. So why couldn't the state release the same data?
So I think what I'm trying to say is that we're looking at that, and you'll probably hear an announcement soon as to the information being released with regards to facilities. So that's to be determined. I think stay tuned, and there'll be more information on that. But I do want to assure Floridians that As it relates to the long-term care facilities, we have been laser focused on doing all of the appropriate measures. And, you know, the governor was the first governor in the country to implement the visitation restrictions. I think that was a critical piece. We want to continue to screen staff. A lot of the cases, what you see has transpired is sick staff members going to work, which is obviously not within the correct protocol for infection control, regardless of the pandemic. But nonetheless, you know, we want to make sure that everything that we do, the strike teams that we have from the Department of Health, the National Guard is pitching in, you know, all of that strategy around long-term care facilities has been really, really focused on making sure we protect our most vulnerable.
Do the facilities have an obligation to inform families of residents if a staff member has tested positive?
They are supposed to inform residents, obviously, especially those family members of infected residents. So we're working through all of that. And like I said, we hope to have more information coming shortly.
What exactly is the state working through a month into the state of emergency regarding the public availability of that information?
Well, again, I think there are legal parameters. I am not a lawyer, so I wouldn't be able to speak to the legalities of it. But I think that, like I said, Governor DeSantis will be making a decision and sharing information at the appropriate time.
Is that appropriate time coming up within a matter of days, a matter of weeks?
Again, I'm not the lawyer in this case. I can only tell you that we are looking at it, making sure that there is no violations of privacy and ensuring that we're making the right decision. But again, we've been trying to be as transparent and accountable as possible, and the safety and well-being of all Floridians, but in particular, those most vulnerable, those most impacted, is something that we're very mindful of.
Duval County is reopening parks and beaches for a few hours per day with some restrictions. Cocoa Beach partially reopened 2 weeks ago. Do you support these local decisions to reopen parts of these counties and cities?
Well, as you know, the governor has been coordinating very closely with local government. As you saw here in South Florida, even before the statewide order, the governor had coordinated with the Tri-County, actually the four South Florida counties, including Monroe. And so I think
Monroe County closed to tourists. Miami-Dade County put a stay-at-home order in on its own before the state stepped in.
They had a regional agreement about a week prior to the state stay-at-home order. So the four counties had come up with a regional strategy, which the governor was in consultation with and coordination with and certainly supported. I think what you'll see is obviously we are looking very closely. I know the city of Jacksonville indicated they would be opening today at 5 p.m., some beaches, some parks, et cetera. So I think what we're going to obviously be very mindful of is what impact does that have on the overall case count in Duval County? So monitoring that very closely. But we understand Florida is a diverse state. And if you look at the state of affairs right now, so Miami-Dade County at this point in time has over 8,300 cases. Orange County, approximately 1,100. If you look at, you know, Duval County, they are probably at 770-ish, if you will. So, you know, there's a big difference between dealing with 8,000 individuals that are infected versus 700. And so as we talk about phase two, as we talk about reopening the economy, we understand that Florida cannot remain closed in perpetuity. So we want to make sure that what we do it in a coordinated fashion, but also keeping in mind the unique circumstances around each county. And so, again, the governor is inclined to be flexible and coordinate with local mayors and county commissioners and things of that nature. But we're going to keep a close eye on the health impact.
That was Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez.
Criticism of Florida's handling of the crisis and whether the state has responded quickly enough to the pandemic has often been led by Florida's only Democratic member of the state cabinet. Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried wants the governor to immediately resume meetings of the cabinet and the state's clemency board, among other things. Commissioner Fried is on the line now, and thanks for being with us.
We are still trying to make a connection, Melissa, with Commissioner Fried, and our engineers are working on that. And just as soon as we get connected, with the commissioner.
And I couldn't hear you for a couple of minutes there. So I didn't know if I was still connected to you, Tom. But, you know, it's really been striking to see how critical she has been of the response of the DeSantis administration, from the unemployment issues to all the agricultural issues that she's also dealing with. You know, we're getting lots of tweets about this, and we'll go to them in a moment. But do we have Nikki Fried now?
Yes. I've been here. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you all either. So I didn't know if I was on. But yes, I am here.
I can hear you, but just not that well. So we'll pot you up, Commissioner Fried, and we'll continue. So you've asked for the resumption of meetings of the state's cabinet, among other things you've been calling on the governor to do. Why is that important right now?
I think it's exceptionally important right now. I mean, just listening to the lieutenant governor's, you know, interview that you had with her, you know, that there's a lot of unanswered questions. There's a lot of information that's not coming out of the governor's office that we need answers on. And transparency is paramount. You know, I've said this all along, is that, you know, when we're going through something like this, our people in our state are concerned, are worried, are scared, and they're looking to their elected officials to give them answers and hope. And when they don't trust what is coming out of an elected official's administration, it brings concerns. And that's why I've asked, you know, the governor to please let us know what's going on. I want to know what he's thinking. I want to see what data he's looking at and be involved in the decision making. You know, we as a cabinet are independently elected. We make decisions together per our Constitution. And we're actually the only state in America that's like that. But the people of Florida elected each of us to do our jobs. And especially, you know, dealing with the fact that I oversee agriculture and our food supply chain here in the state of Florida. So having cabinet meeting and having this transparency, allowing our agencies to be reporting to us is really critical. Our citizens are depending on us to work together and showing a unified front and giving them all the answers. I also heard about your question lines on the assisted living facilities and the nursing homes. I can guarantee you that if somebody that I loved was in one of those homes and I wasn't getting the answers and couldn't get in them, you better believe that I would be going on to every.
Sure. And I think many Florida residents have those same concerns. But let me ask you as a follow up. It's my understanding you haven't been in touch with the governor for a few weeks. You are the only Democrat in his cabinet. You've been accused by Republicans in Tallahassee of going after his crisis management for partisan reasons. What's your response to that?
Absolutely not. This has nothing to do with him being a Republican, me being a Democrat. You know, it is my job to hold our elected officials accountable, as everybody should be holding me accountable. You know, being held accountable and asking poignant questions is not partisan. And I have said that since the day I got elected is always going to be a state before party. And the fact that they are, in fact, making this partisan, I mean, you can even look at who the governor is talking to and calling. It's members only of his own party, whereas I have been on town halls across the entire state with associations, with U.S. senators, with state representatives, with our members of our Florida congressional delegation, irrespective of what their party affiliation is. It's about getting information out. Nothing I have done has anything to do with partisan politics, has everything to do about the wellness of our state and holding our leaders accountable. And I would expect the same from them to me.
We're going to continue the conversation with Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried and your calls and tweets here on the Florida Roundup. In a few moments, I hope you'll stick with us, Commissioner, as we talk about agriculture issues in the state, disruptions to the food supply chain, your request to the USDA for aid to Florida farmers. And we want to hear from Florida right now. How are you doing out there? Have you filed for unemployment? Have you had trouble getting unemployment? Are you furloughed from work? Are you sheltering at home? What do you think about the reopening of some beaches? What do you think about wrestling being declared essential in Florida? There is so much we're talking about on today's show. Give us a call from wherever you are, 305-995-1800, and keep your tweets coming to @FloridaRoundup as we continue with Ag Commissioner Nikki Fried in just a few moments after the break. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Your phone call's coming up in a few minutes, 305-995-1800, across the state at 305-995-1800.
and tweets to @FloridaRoundup. A partisan split we're seeing on social media in terms of how people feel the state is handling the pandemic. Here's a tweet from Bill in Jacksonville. I think the best word to characterize it is this is malpractice. Another tweet, though, says, my parents live in Florida part of the year. They're snowbirds. They feel the governor is doing a great job. One person who disagrees with that is the state's agriculture commissioner, Nikki Fried. She continues on the show with us as we discuss what her office is doing to deal with the pandemic. Commissioner Fried, you are working with the state's farmers to try to work through disruptions to the food supply chain. And what are the biggest issues you're seeing?
You know, unfortunately, so many of our farmers are so used to the demands from restaurants and Disney and the cruise line industry and even schools. And so unfortunately, when a lot of those closed, the market changed, the market switched. And so many of our farmers are, you know, working around the clock, still trying to get their crops out. A lot of them are donating a lot of their food. But unfortunately, during these hard times, they're having to plow under a lot of their crops. So we've been working around the clock with them, really trying to come up with new resources. We have created and launched a brand new webpage on our website called Keep Florida Growing, which is allowing all of our ag communities to upload what they have available and allow the consumers to go right onto the website, find out where their local produce is and from those farmers, including new picks, different farmers markets. It's a great tool to connect them. We also have been very much lobbying and in touch with the federal government and the USDA in particular, working through different tools and techniques.
I know you've asked the government for aid, the federal government. Are you likely to get it?
Yes, actually. We are seeing a tremendous support from the USDA, not only on the money that should be coming down to help support our school programs, our feeding programs, as well as our food banks, but also specific support for our specialty crops. I mean, Florida is the specialty crop of the nation. We've got 300 plus different specialty crop commodities. And so we need a little bit extra hand. And it's up to the consumers, too. There's going to be a consumer awareness awakening, is what I'm calling it, really demanding fresh from Florida, Florida grown produce in the food stores, and you're seeing a lot more of that. And so it's going to be up to all of us to really pitch in, finding ways to connect the consumers, the farmers, the federal government dollars, and including some more leniency from the federal government, allowing us to buy specifically the crops from our Florida farmers.
Let's go to some calls now for Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried, and let us know how you're dealing with all of the effects of this pandemic right now. Call us up here on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800 is the number to join us. Wendy is in Palm City. Hey, Wendy, how are you today?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Doing well, thanks. Go ahead.
Good. So, well, first of all, I just wanted to thank Commissioner Fried. Every day watching the news, watching the cases go up and up, and feeling very hopeless, stuck home with my kids, working from home, and that's not going very well. But
right, for a lot of us, yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult. So, you know, I really appreciate it. It's good to know that, you know, Commissioner Fried, you're there, you're fighting for everyone, for, you know, people who are, from the unemployment issues, to, you know, pushing our governor, who doesn't seem to be making, you know, these kind of decisions, you know, in the appropriate time frame, closing down places. It just feels good to know that you're there. Greatly appreciate it. And I just encourage you to please keep fighting for all of us. As a person who eats mostly vegetables, my biggest concern, and I was really excited to see the issue with trying to help the Florida farmers, I just want to know more about where I can connect or how I can find information to get, you know, local produce, locally farmed produce.
Sure.
For my family.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Wendy.
Yeah, thank you, Wendy, for that, for those comments. And as I am homeschooling this week, my three stepsons, I am right there with you. And, you know, so what we have done is on our website, which is FDACS, which is FDACS.gov/keepfloridagrowing. It is a one-stop shop website that basically connects the farmers to the consumers. It has right there on that website all of the different agricultural commodities that might be in your community that could be sold right from the individual farmers, has also all of the UPIC sites in your community, as well as all the farmers markets that are in your community. And it's also a place where all of our ag community goes to upload all of their information, get up-to-date information on all the PPP programs, any of the state bridge applications, and ways to get through to us if there's any questions or concerns. Also has guidelines on there of how to make sure that they are following all the CDC guidelines on their workforce too. So thank you, Wendy.
Commissioner Fried, you know, we're getting a lot of tweets to the show praising your stewardship of the agriculture sector in the state. And you are the only Democrat in the Florida cabinet, as we've noted. And certainly partisanship is a reality in this state, as it is everywhere. But I want to ask you, because you've gotten strong support from Democrats around the state and they like your higher profile, they've urged you to run for governor yourself. And are you planning to do that? Is your criticism of Ron DeSantis in part motivated by maybe future higher political aspirations you have?
You know, I want to start off with my number one priority today. And in the future is feeding our state and taking care of agriculture. Agriculture is now the number one economic driver of our state. I have fallen in love as being on your show earlier during the campaign, knowing that I don't have an agriculture background. What I have done is, you know, really learn to love what I'm doing, love agriculture, and really see that my
role. But that doesn't mean you don't have future goals. Are you looking at a run for governor?
That is definitely not something that I'm thinking about today. Today, I'm focused on homeschooling my three boys, keeping agriculture alive, making sure that the children in our state are being fed. My hands are so full with those responsibilities. I've got to keep that as a
priority. But you haven't ruled it out?
You know, I don't know what the future will hold, but I can tell you that today, that right now, my focus is on the state, on getting us through this pandemic, opening back up our state, getting our economy back on its feet, and making sure that agriculture and our state are thriving once we get through this pandemic.
All right. She is Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried on the line from Tallahassee. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, this pandemic certainly is a local story. It's a state, national, and global story. We can compare what's happening right here in our own communities with what's happening hundreds, if not thousands, of miles away, including the response by the state of Florida and Governor Ron DeSantis, comparing his performance with that of other governors around the country.
One recent piece that drew an unfavorable comparison between our governor and the governor of Ohio appeared in the Orlando Sentinel. Right now, we welcome Mike Lafferty, the opinion editor at the Sentinel. Hey, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon.
Thanks for being with us, and keep the calls coming to the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800, tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Now, in your op-ed, you unfavorably compared Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida to Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. You said the only thing they have in common is the "duh" at the beginning of their name. Right. So what DeWine or DeSantis, what prompted you to draw these comparisons?
Well, you know, one of the things about working from home is you maybe hear some voices you don't always hear during the course of the day. My wife had been following Governor DeWine, reading about him quite a bit. And she kept mentioning things that he was doing and the attention he was getting and the caliber of his performance. And it occurred to me that maybe it would be worthwhile to look at what that governor had done compared with what our governor has or has not done. And so that's what I started doing. That's what prompted it, my wife.
And the differences you say are stark. What are the biggest differences between Florida and Ohio in response to the pandemic?
Well, the one you can immediately point your finger at is the stay-at-home order. You know, Governor DeSantis, for quite a long time, was considered that to be a local decision. So here in Orange County, you know, the Orange County mayor issued a stay-at-home order. That was followed by Osceola County, and then other counties throughout the state had been doing and would continue to do that. You know, in contrast, you know, Governor DeWine issued a executive order, stay-at-home order, safer-at-home order, on March 24th. And, you know, other governors had been doing that as well. You know, in Governor DeSantis, there was a lot of pressure brought to bear on him to do that as well. But he kept relying on local governments. And so it really wasn't until April 3rd, you know, more than a week after Governor DeWine had acted, that Governor DeSantis did. And, you know, I think people are pretty clear that time is of the essence when it comes to acting to halt the spread of infection. And, you know, our position was that the Governor DeSantis just waited too long.
You think he waited too long. Certainly, you know, states have always been called laboratories of government. Different states have different ideas about how they handle things. And the mm-hmm. nation's governors have come under a lot of scrutiny in recent days, in particular with how they relate to the president, the White House, and how they're taking their cues or not from the White House. Are you saying in part that the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, has not been proactive enough because he's trying to align himself with the White House in terms of pandemic response? Because, well, you know, both Ron DeSantis and Mike DeWine are Republicans, but Mike DeWine has made some different decisions in this thing.
They have. Yeah, I can't know what is going through Ron DeSantis's head, but it is not too hard to draw parallels between his hesitation to take difficult and painful steps to deal with the pandemic, and compare those to the hesitation that the president has had. You know, if you recall, it wasn't all that long ago he thought that it would disappear like a miracle. At least that's what he said. And he made a number of statements along those lines, essentially telling people, don't worry about it. Everything's under control. And, you know, it's also, I mean, we all know the parallels, or rather the connections between President Trump and Governor DeSantis. You know, the president endorsed him very heartily when the governor is running for election, and they share some of the same approaches and policies. And so it certainly is possible he is taking his cues from the White House.
It's been interesting to note that Mike DeWine in Ohio is a long time hand in state and federal government posts, and he has talked a lot about how his many decades of experience dealing with all manner of crises, in his view, helped him take those early proactive steps in dealing with the pandemic up there. And you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
305-995-1800. We're about a little over a month into the state of emergency for the state of Florida dealing with COVID-19. How have you been dealing with the past month? Stay-at-home orders, have you been affected economically? Federal stimulus checks began to arrive this week. Have you tried to file for unemployment with the troubles in the state of Florida? 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup. Mike Lafferty continues with us, opinions editor at the Orlando Sentinel, and we'll say hello to Samantha in Tampa Bay. Samantha, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Tell us your story, please.
So my husband and I both find ourselves out of work going on almost over a month now with absolutely zero aid. We both applied for the unemployment and have been on hold, like, you know, trying to log in every day. Finally, just to a day ago, see it pull up ineligible. And also, we haven't received our stimulus checks because of our nature. We don't have our account on file, and the IRS page to add your account also does not work. And then on top of that, we're also 5 months pregnant. Mm. So at this point, I don't know if we start over and try to file another unemployment claim. I guess that's my biggest question, is where do we go from here?
Samantha, have you gotten any indication from the Department of Economic Opportunity, which runs the unemployment site in Florida, about why your claim was rejected and what to do?
There is zero way to contact them. There's supposed to be a way on the site to appeal it. However, that's not active right now. I also tried to call multiple times for multiple days, and they're just overloaded.
Yeah, Samantha, well, congratulations on the coming addition to the family, and I'm sorry to hear about the economic situation that you and your family find yourselves in. We'll put it out to listeners if you have some ideas for Samantha in Tampa Bay, 305-995-1800. Mike Lafferty, the opinions editor with the Orlando Sentinel, it's a story that is repeated over and over and over again with varying degrees of concern, of course, Mike, but certainly the inability for the state government to deal with a flood of unemployment claims is a bit of a litmus test for the DeSantis administration's preparations for this, isn't it?
There are so many tragic elements to what's happening right now, but you know, the some of the most heartbreaking stories are people who've lost their jobs and all they want are to get these meager benefits that the state of Florida offers. And you know, it's tempting to go back in time, which we did in an editorial. We took a look at the unemployment system, but spent some time pointing out the lawmakers who were involved with Governor Scott in essentially making the unemployment system in Florida worse. But, you know, I think to his credit, you know, Governor DeSantis, he seems to comprehend the scale of what is has gone wrong for so many people. And but the approach to fixing it, it just has kind of a piecemeal feel to it. You know, it's kind of like it's a whack-a-mole. They keep, you know, a new problem crops up, like people are having to go in and re-up their benefits every couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, he's waived that. There was an executive order that he did waive that yesterday, but there were problems with PIN numbers, personal identification numbers, of course, problems with just logging on, and it led to the state printing out hundreds of thousands of paper documents for people to try to file and pick those up at libraries. Mike Lafferty, stick around. We got to take a short break. We'll talk more about the state response to COVID-19. 305-995-1800 as the roundup continues. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, as we've been discussing today, Governor Ron DeSantis has come in for a lot of criticism over the last several weeks around a long list of controversies related to the COVID-19 crisis. Now, in a minute, we're going to talk about one of those issues when he declared professional wrestling an essential business in the state. More about that in a minute. But first, you know, the big issue that everybody is most concerned about, people that are out of work, nearly a million of you across Florida, is unemployment insurance. State Representative Anna Escamani just tweeted the Florida Roundup and said she wants to make sure for folks who are listening and asking questions about unemployment insurance that she has an update on Medium.com about the Department of Economic Opportunity and is trying to answer her constituents in Central Florida their questions about unemployment. And as she points out, there are still three groups of people waiting for money from the CARES Act. That's the $600 federal unemployment check. This is those of you who qualify for state unemployment, those of you who are self-employed or gig economy workers who haven't gotten benefits yet, and those who've expired all their Florida weeks and are still trying to access 13 additional weeks provided by the federal government. And there's more in this post, Tom, but this just shows you that state representatives, both Democrats and Republicans, are telling us that this is the number one issue that they're hearing about from their constituents, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And to Samantha, our earlier caller from Tampa, the expectant mom, 5 months pregnant, she and her husband out of work, a state insurance claim denied, has not received any kind of update on the federal stimulus money, the up to $1,200, for instance. Representative Escamani has also tweeted us, Samantha, if you're following us on Twitter, she gives her email address to help you out, Samantha. So look for us at Florida Roundup is the Twitter handle. All right, let's talk about wrestling, right? An essential service here a month into the state of emergency. Mark Schreiner is the assistant news director at WUSF, our sister station in Tampa. He's been looking into this. Mark, walk us through what happened. Did the governor come out and declare specifically World Wrestling as an essential service?
Well, Tom, I've been a pro wrestling fan on and off for 35 years. I don't think even 12-year-old me would have ever viewed pro wrestling as essential. The governor's order basically talks about what are called employees at a professional sports and media production with a national audience. Now, that doesn't just mean WWE. Mm-hmm. That could mean Ultimate Fighting. That could mean literally any major sporting event. The governor has talked about NASCAR, perhaps, a golf showdown with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, but all these things taking place without fans. So he clarifies by saying not WWE specifically, but still just kind of the sports in general.
Yeah. And what was the rationale that the governor offered for this new category that was created for essential services?
Well, one is that they're characterized as critical to Florida's economy. Now, that can be argued either way. The other argument that, oddly enough, on Tuesday when he issued this order, the governor said it, and then literally an hour or two later, the president almost said the exact same words, saying that Americans are hungry for new content and they're tired of watching sports reruns from the early 2000s. Mimicking what a lot of people have said today on today's show, we heard from a lot of our listeners who said they're starved for things like maybe a walk on the beach or, more importantly, a COVID-19 test or an unemployment check.
Sure. And we continue to get calls about unemployment. We'll go to one in a moment. But, you know, Mark, as you've been reporting, a political action committee chaired by Linda McMahon, the wife of WWE owner Vince McMahon, just donated more than $18 million in TV ad spending in the Orlando and Tampa markets to promote the president's reelection from Labor Day through Election Day. They made that donation the same day Governor DeSantis declared wrestling essential.
Yeah,
so the question we all have is there a connection between those two things?
Well, of course, the thought is that there is. I mean, again, causation, correlation. The governor's office would never say that that is indeed the case. The timing, as you mentioned, very interesting. Also, the tie that Linda McMahon, in addition to being the wife of CEO Vince McMahon, she's also the former head of the Small Business Administration under President Trump. Long tie to President Trump. President Trump long ties to the WWE as well. So the idea that, you know, April 9th, the check is issued from the PACs, or the PACs are going to start spending it, and then the announcement from the governor's office. So Jerry Demings, the Orange County mayor, he had long said, you know, this was not essential. This was not necessary. As a matter of fact, Orange County sheriff's officers had stopped by the Performance Center in Orlando, where WWE holds some of their shows. They stopped by at tapings that didn't have crowds in March and April, basically saying that you're violating the order and you need to stop.
And they've got employees who've tested positive and now everyone's got to go back to work.
At least one person who works on camera but not as a wrestler tested positive. That person has basically recovered because it was back in late March, early April. One other interesting thing really quick from a financial standpoint is that WWE, right after all these announcements of becoming an essential company and going on with their live shows, is that the company furloughed or released about 30 to 40 people, including a number of wrestlers, producers, coaches, other behind-the-scenes staff, on Wednesday and Thursday. That very much a financial move as well, because it is WWE, if people don't realize, is a publicly traded company. They are going to release their quarterly earnings next week. Remember, this is a company that took a hit because they had to cancel WrestleMania the live event in front of a huge crowd in Tampa earlier this month. Vince McMahon's other business, the XFL, just declared bankruptcy. So again, this is a cost-cutting move, and it follows right after being told that they're an essential business.
Mark Schreiner is the assistant news director at WUSF, our sister station in Tampa. Mark, thanks for the update.
Thank you, Tom.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Let's go to Chris in Tampa. He's got a question about unemployment benefits in Florida. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you guys?
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
Okay, so my wife had her hours reduced from 40 down to 16 hours a week. And so she went online to the Florida's unemployment or reemployment website and tried to apply, and she was denied based on her not meeting the $275 threshold. I think she made $300, so she just went over. Our confusion lies where we thought that the CARES Act added an additional $600 to that threshold to meet. So would we still be denied based on making over $275 a week?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, Chris. I think the answer should be you should not be denied. But given all the issues that people have been having accessing these benefits, you know, Tom, I don't know what the answer is for Chris's family.
Chris, is the question how much of the $600 from the federal government you may qualify for?
Yeah, if we wouldn't be entitled.
Yeah, so that's a flat. The way I understand the CARES Act, Chris, is that's a flat $600 amount that is given to the states, and then the states then would provide those dollars to folks that qualify for state unemployment
and
benefits.
Is he making too much to qualify is what I think we've got to figure out.
So there's a limit on the state side, right? The state portion of the benefit is maximum is $275 a week from the state of Florida based upon your income level prior to you losing your job.
And you still are making some income, you're saying, so you don't think you'll get the benefits?
So, right. So because she made $300 and didn't make $270, if she made $270, would she have gotten the entire $600?
Yeah. Walk through this math. So they're completely separate qualifications, Chris. There's the state qualification, which there's a formula that you can look online based upon your pre-unemployment income of how much of the state unemployment benefit you will qualify for. You will not qualify for any more than $275 a week from the state of Florida.
But it sounds like you're worried, Chris, that that because you're still making some money now that you won't get unemployment, right?
Correct. She's not entitled to the state unemployment because she did make over $275 a week, but she's making far less than she was making due to COVID and her hours being reduced because she was forced to work from home.
And I would apply and try. I would try to get the benefits.
We did. It came back with a denial that she didn't meet the $275 threshold.
Right.
But I thought, I don't know what we need to do to be entitled to the $600 that the government gave under the CARES Act.
Right. The $600 comes through to the states, and then the states allocate those dollars based upon their unemployment qualifications.
But if he's not qualifying for the state check, he's not going to get the federal check.
Right.
Correct. That's what I'm getting at.
That's the problem.
That seems awful odd. So if she made $30 less, she'd get $600 plus whatever the state was going to give her.
I this sounds terrible to say, but maybe she needs to work a few hours less.
Less. She does. All right. That's what it seems like to me, too. But the company doesn't want her to work less. They need her to work 16
hours. I'm so sorry, Chris. I'm so sorry you're going through this. Really am. And everybody out there that's going through this. It's terrible. And I wish you the best. And I appreciate you calling. I know there are so many more others out there just like you who are trying to weigh these terrible decisions right now. And I thank you for telling your story to us today. It's tough. It's tough out there, Tom. And, you know, it's really been an eye-opener to listen to people from around the state and just what they're dealing with.
Indeed.
It's a serious time.
It is a serious time. And the public health measures that are designed to slow the spread have that unfortunate economic consequence that a lot of Floridians and a lot of Americans are certainly dealing with these days.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Florida Roundup. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are our producers.
Jason Zabka, the director of radio programming at WLRN, our technical director, and the director of radio operations is Peter Meritz. Richard Ives answers the phones. Engineering help from Charles Michaels and Josh Torres. Our theme music from Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos. More at AaronLibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Stay safe. We'll see you next Friday at noon.